This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 227, Video Killed the Audio Star. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Michael Rowe here on a wonderful summer-like winter day, Friday afternoon at gamesandwork.biz with my friend and co-host, Michael Martin.
Woohoo! Happy Friday to you, Michael, and happy Friday or happy whatever day it is for our listeners, because you are in the future and you're seeing things that we don't even know yet.
Happy day.
Happy day. It's a happy day. Oh, happy day.
Oh, happy day.
Speaking of happy days, Michael, Microsoft put together just a fantabulous commercial for the Super Bowl, which you were just sharing with me. You spent all of, I think it was 0 minutes watching?
Yes, of the Super Bowl. I watched football that night, the kind that's round and that people use their feet on the entire time.
I see. Interesting. Except when they use their hands, and then there's supposed to be a penalty. Supposed to be.
Right. Or unless they're throwing it in bounds. Then they can use their hands. Which is perfectly fine. I thought this was a beautiful commercial, and I know evidently there was a 2018 commercial in a similar vein that they had done with one kid who's featured and talking about how, you know, video gaming kind of lets him interact with other kids his own age. He does have a physical disability, and this commercial was all about other kids with physical disabilities playing video games with an accessible controller.
Right. This is the Xbox Adaptive Controller, which allows the player to custom configure what buttons and what actions correspond to an Xbox controller, so they can actually play games and be competitive even if they don't have the manual dexterity in fingers to be a kid and to play games with other kids. And I thought this was fabulous too.
It really was. It's kind of one of the reasons why we got into games is, you know, it kind of levels the environment for people and allows people in disparate locations with different skill sets to interact in a common way. Kind of the foundation of Dancing with Wookiees, man.
Yeah, well, and being accessible and having everyone have the opportunity to participate is a message that really resounds through this. And considerations that developers of both hardware and software should be thinking about is one of the things that just kind of spoke to me here too. And there's lots of different dimensions of all that. And look at all the good that can happen when you think about those things and design them in. Love that.
Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff. Good stuff. Heartfelt, beautiful commercial. Really enjoyed it.
So related to video games writ large, you found this interesting article about, I'll just read the title and then let's dive in. The flops are piling up for video game titans. So a little bit of clickbait there.
Oh, and lots of clickbait, right?
And, you know, what's considered a flop now? Boy, that's kind of rough, isn't it?
Yeah, I love this article because, as you say, major clickbait. Matter of fact, you and I think, both found it in Apple News. Because of the way we share articles for this show, we don't want to give you Apple News links because not everybody's on an Apple platform. So we try to find the original article. And this article was cut and pasted by Bloomberg, by SFGate, by Medium, by, you know, I found probably 20 or 30 different sites, all with the same headline, all with the same content, basically saying that, if you remember a couple of weeks ago, we talked about how the entertainment industry TVs and movies were now being dwarfed by the amount of money being made in video games.
Right.
Because they're a major form of entertainment. And now this article is, I guess, trying to throw a nice, just wet blanket on top of that saying, yeah, but they're only making, well, let me see, Red Dead Redemption only sold 23 million units right now. And at $60 a pop, how much is that? That's got to be a major flop, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, we've talked about this before, about the emergence of video games as an industry taking on and surpassing even other forms of entertainment, both in the development side as well as the earnings side of the equation. And it's really striking to me, too, that one of the things that this article was talking about was that the value add within the game, so in-game or in-app purchases, so in-game purchases, are things that are not growing here now at the rate that people thought they might be. The example of Red Dead, which starts with a price for the game itself and then has additional things you can buy in the game that are decorative or maybe functional, they're not seeing enough of that coming through. Whereas free-to-play games or free-to-start games, and especially with Fortnite and these Battle Royale games, which have really taken on the next steps, those on the flip side have seen a great deal of the microtransactions, the in-game purchases, and that spurs and fuels their growth. So I thought it was interesting that how do you find the right balance about paying for the game and the game content versus still free to play and then paying for additional things in game that people want that may or may not have an awful large bearing on how the game is played.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. And I think one of the key things that I get out of articles like this is, we have such a growth mentality when it comes to whether or not something is successful. Matter of fact, that we saw this with Apple's earnings, where yes, certain revenue indicators went down, but the bigger issue was that certain parts of their portfolio weren't growing as much as they used to. And I just look at a lot of these types of articles of any type of industry or type of product or offering that lasts multiple years, right? Because Red Dead, they're actually talking about, you know, you had Red Dead, now you have Red Dead 2. What's going to happen with Red Dead 3, right? And it's like, if it's not growing faster than Red Dead 2, which blah, 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 it's like, you know, if I'm pulling in, I'm just going to make up numbers for illustration purposes. If my costs are $40 million and I pull in $100 million in revenue year in and year out with a net growth of zero, right? I am considered a failure, even though I am consistently generating $60 million in profit. And that is, I think, a fundamental flaw with our logic nowadays.
Just that's one of those unbelievable kind of things.
Yeah, yeah. It just, I understand the desire for growth, but sometimes you can just be successful.
Oh, to have problems like that, huh?
Yeah, yeah. I got to figure out how to have that happen with my income.
So software has all kinds of challenges, as we know, and yes. we had a roundup or round back or close out or something like that from our conversation last week around the group FaceTime bug and the update that come out from Apple yesterday, as I recall, correct?
Yes. And I've installed it on my devices and on my desktops and my laptops. And so far, I've noticed nothing different, which is good.
Yeah, I did the same. And from my laptop on Mac OS, it was one of those, I need to do this update at a time when I'm not needing my machine right away, because it was a pretty substantial, you know, setup, download, and install process. So everything's all happy here, too.
Yeah. Now, the good news about this, when this FaceTime bug came out, people got all bent out of shape on how it was reported, how long it took, whether or not the reporter of the bug was being appropriately remunerated, et cetera, et cetera. And that's all watered under the bridge now. The kid's getting the bug bounty, which that's good. Apple has said, yeah, we handled it badly and we're going to do better next time. That's good. And the bug is fixed. That's good. Big check mark. I think we can close the book on FaceTime's bug.
Exactly. Hooray. Let's
moving on.
Let's move along. So the TechCrunch article that we've got up next talks about the ability of playing with smart speakers, specifically around Alexa and Audible, to do an audio version of Choosing Your Own Adventure. And I used to read these books all the time, and gosh, I had lots of fun with them. We've talked about these a few times on the show too. Wasn't there in a game development environment, Michael, where you could easily code a Choose Your Own Adventure game and set it up on a website? Didn't we do that once too?
Trying to remember. I think we did, and I could have swore that a year or two ago we talked about this kind of idea. Basically talking like Zork and Leather Goddesses of Phobos and all the other text adventures. But yeah, I think the reason this has come out is the Black Mirror episode that just came out that had a choose your own ending type storyline. And the resurgence of that idea to make entertainment much more personalized, I guess, is the best way to look at it. And as you say, as little kids, we all kind of read books that would say, if they go left, go to page 7. If they go right, go to page 8. Right?
Yeah. Yep.
And I actually wrote a text adventure as a co-op to train new co-ops on the security procedures that we had in place in the lab that I worked at in college.
Really?
Yeah. It made sure that they came in, used the right badges for the right doors, brought the systems up correctly, etc. It was kind of fun. It's basically just a big jump table.
Well, yeah, right. That's exactly what it is. Now you know, the thing that this article kind of reminded me of, too, is that I'm a big NPR listener. Fans of the show know that. And we're in the final day of the February pledge drive. Happens every year. And one of the things that our local NPR station has been giving away as one of the prizes for or contests that you might be able to win a drawing for a smart speaker in your home. And and I'm sure Andy will love hearing this too. So the smart speakers that you could get include one from the G company and one from the A company, but not one from the other A company.
So no S, just a
just an A. Yes. Yeah. So I was thinking to myself, boy, should I be so lucky as a sustainer to win the drawing for a smart speaker? You know, I would have to say thank you very much. You can give it to somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah. I am so glad that today is the last day of the spring fundraiser. But no, I also listen to NPR and support our local station, as well as some of the national stuff, just because I like the news coverage, right?
Right. Exactly. And I do too. So you got to suffer through this every once in a while. And I appreciate that it's shorter because of people who contribute and contribute on a regular basis. So like on the weekends, they could avoid having to tell everybody to do stuff. So that's good.
And if you would like to contribute to gamesatwork.biz, send a self-addressed stamped envelope to money at Michael and Michael, P.O. Box 12345.
Our fair city.
Our fair city. New York, New York.
But what would they want the self-addressed stamped envelope for? Are we sending them stuff back?
No. But yeah, that was always the big thing, right? If you remember back in the day.
I do. I remember. Back in the day when the U.S. Postal Service was the way to communicate.
That's right.
So let's talk about a more modern way to communicate. And that's actually the tool that we're using right now, and it's Skype. And apparently, maybe not on the version that we've got, and maybe it's being rolled out a little bit slower. It says it's just been rolled out. Apparently, with Skype, you can now blur your background, maybe even get a Ken Burns effect, too. I don't know. What was your take on this?
You know, I was thinking about this, especially from a business meeting perspective. Can't remember who ran the ad, but you remember the ad where the guy is doing a web conference, and in the background, I think, like, their spouse comes in and starts taking off their clothes, and you see it on the camera. And I think it would be a really good idea for webcam-based applications to blur the background out. So you can't tell, am I taking this conference call from the bedroom, from the bathroom, or from my office? Or the coffee shop, for that matter.
The coffee. Yeah, I wonder about this, too. I think focusing on the person really is good. What I wonder is how much of that, I guess most of that could be done in software when you think about it, right? You can identify the person, and then you could do the soft lens approach on everything else.
Yeah, well, so. And I think we talked about a while back a website that you could upload your picture and it would clear the background.
Right.
And what that tells me is we are getting better and better and better with our machine learning algorithms at identifying the relevant content within a picture or video stream. And so if we can start by having an appropriate background blur and eventually just wipe the background out completely.
Yep.
If you remember...
Oh, it's like a green screen, like auto green screening, right?
Exactly. So a photo booth on the Mac has an ability where you turn it on, it says step out of the picture, and then step back into the picture, and it uses that to kind of isolate the subject and then allows you to put yourself like in amongst the clouds or in a fish tank or whatever.
Under the sea.
Yeah. With this, getting the ability to isolate the correct image at the time without all that extra step, right? I think that's really, really cool, and I think it shows the power of machine learning and how we're getting better and better at this. I'm wondering if there are any issues with what's your hair color or hair type, right? You know, in green screen, one of the big problems that you have is color of clothing or even, you know, your eyes, depending on is it a green screen or a blue screen, right?
Right.
Matter of fact, one of the reasons they went to green screen from the original chroma key blue, as it was called, was blue had a tendency to have issues with certain skin tones. So you went to green because if you're kind of green looking, you probably shouldn't be on camera.
Or you could be back in Mars.
Maybe. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Huh.
So
interesting. Yeah. I didn't know that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
But if I could be isolated in a image or camera stream, what else could you do to that?
Well, you could do face detection, couldn't you?
You could do face detection. And face detection is kind of cool when you know about it.
Yeah, exactly. So
actually, this is not really face detection, but I love the image that they use.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of funny too. So yeah. we're moving now from the Skype environment and that level of video to how might a company like Facebook, in this case, understand how your information was used for targeted advertisements. And what Facebook was doing around requiring advertisers to submit that they had actual permission to leverage certain pieces of data like phone numbers and more.
Yeah, this is really interesting. I don't know if we've talked about this, but I have my own issues with Facebook, and I've gotten off of it for a while and had to get back on for promotional material, whether that's this podcast or some stuff I was doing at work or stuff that I'm doing with my nonprofit opera group. But I've been using a plugin in my various browsers called Facebook Purity, which allows you to do a couple of different things. One, it allows you to put the stream in chronological order so you don't miss stuff, because Facebook, like Twitter and others, has their algorithm of what you really should be seeing because of your friends or whatever. It also recently introduced a button that goes into the ads/permissions page and clears out all the things that Facebook thinks it knows about you. And one of those things is advertisers of where did they connect with you or how did they connect with you. So you have these pages that have pixel tracking where they kind of, quote, follow you around the web.
And right,
Facebook,
exactly.
Facebook has that same ability. And a lot of times you get these, I think they call them shadow profiles built, even if you don't ever use Facebook, where it's still building a profile on you. And so what this article seems to imply is if an advertiser gets access to your data from another site or another way, and then is using that along with Facebook's content to provide specific targeted stuff, that's going to start being exposed. And I think if that's really what they're going to do, that's going to be very powerful for people to start understanding what's really being tracked about them.
Well, this level of transparency becomes super important as you're focusing attention on machine learning and artificial intelligence, because the decision making that happens has to take into account why the decision was made to take a particular action. And it's only when that level of transparency is there that the level of trust that people can have in the system can be at an, can be really obtained. So
yep.
What I liked about the screen grabs that are in here is that Facebook is showing why am I seeing this particular ad, and it's explaining in very clear terms exactly why.
Mm-hmm.
So if we think about what's been happening in Europe with GDPR and the more recent conversations in the US Congress, it'll be intriguing to see what moves from what companies are voluntarily doing to what may become legally mandated for the future in the United States as it is in other countries around the world.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep. So pretty cool stuff. Speaking of some pretty cool stuff, or maybe some a little bit shady stuff, there was an article that came across my radar this week dealing with some relatively popular apps in the Apple App Store that were recording screens and screen actions for analytics purposes that allowed the recipients to actually see interactions because those were recorded. And I thought to myself, gosh, wouldn't you imagine that should be disclosed, that sort of thing was happening? And I've actually subsequently seen some conversations too about Apple looking for companies and apps that do this to come clean on it and say that they do, so that it's it can be used to inform the user population. If you download this app, you should expect and see this sort of thing to happen.
Yeah. Now, this is another one of those where I actually see kind of all sides of the story.
Sure.
And it causes some interesting discussions in my own head. So. And I'm losing the argument right now.
What does the frosted side of you say?
So it has been a very common practice in software of all kind to request permission to get access to quote-unquote telemetry data so that the application developer can improve the app and its experience over time, right? Mm-hmm. So, matter of fact, if you go into Windows 10 and go through their security and privacy settings, they talk about, can we have access to telemetry data? And my first answer is no. And my second answer is heck no. And my third is, I will block that through my pie hole and you will never see it.
Well.
But besides that, so do apps do this? Absolutely. Is it something that is beneficial to users? Yes, because you can only test so much as it relates to an application before it becomes publicly available and all your assumptions go out the window because you never realize that the users would do it that way, whatever it is, right? So absolutely understand why, you know, branded applications, and they call out, you know, some very specific brands, you know, Hotels.com, right? Hollister, Expedia, right? These are companies that you wouldn't consider quote-unquote shady. They're major names, and you would expect them to want to improve the experience of their application. However, back to transparency and GDPR, understanding that everything you are doing while you are in that application can be recorded, and not just keystroke capturing, which is great information, especially since you're typing in your credit card, say, to register a hotel room, but could even be videoed. And that was something that was added in iOS 12, I believe. There's an option to do a really easy video of your screen. Obviously, if you can do that yourself, an API must exist that allows for an application to do that.
Right.
And so the fact that apps may not have communicated that this was a feature that was implemented in their app, I think is unfortunate. I am glad that Apple has called out that they're going to start doing some tests to see if apps are doing this and that they must expose that they're doing it to their users. I know years ago when I was looking at the mobile market for my day job, one of the things that testing apps had, which also do this type of feature, is the ability to automatically mask critical data. So you say, okay, I might be able to record this, but I will never be able to capture a credit card, as an example.
Right.
So getting that level of disclosure and transparency, I think, is key, back to your point on the Facebook article, in building trust with your users.
You know, I've been thinking more and more about trust these days on lots of different levels, and building and maintaining trust is simple, yet incredibly difficult to do. That's the easiest way to say it. And when the trust is broken in one way or another, then it causes you to go, okay, I need to take this new information into account, and what do I need to trust something else? So, but reading the user comments on, you know, this particular page in Mac Rumors, or looking at some of the other things, I kind of get it. So it's an intriguing thing to think about, maybe for another day, on how can trust be really built from the start and then expanded upon? Because when there's a high degree of trust, more can be done than when there is suspicion or worry or whatever. And what I like about what GDPR requires, as an example, is that it requires disclosure, not in EULAs or, you know, 300 page, you know, 4-point font type, you know, all the things that you're agreeing to, but no one ever reads in that level of detail unless they're going through court proceedings. But to say in plain terminology, here's what you're doing, here's what we're doing, here's how we work together. If that's acceptable to you, please proceed. If it's going to change, we'll tell you, and we'll tell you in plain terminology as well.
Yeah.
So, okay. Good to think about. you know, Michael, as we're wrapping up, the last thing that was on the Hit Parade here was something that surprised me, and that's the Raspberry Pi store. I saw Andy, you know, Piper talking about Raspberry Pis here recently on Twitter, and I thought, did I just say Twitter? My voice break. I didn't realize that there's a Raspberry Pi store.
Yeah, this was a funny article. When I saw it, I was like, okay, I can understand the Apple store. I can understand, which is what they try to compare it to. I understand the Microsoft stores. We have one near the house here. Yeah. With something that costs $35.
You need a whole store for that?
You need a whole store for that? But this is a great idea. I love this, right? This is really about a place where people who don't have a makerspace could go and see all the cool little gadgets and things that you could possibly do with a Raspberry Pi. And, you know, I've got a couple here in the house. I've got a couple of other boards like, oh, God, what's the other one that I'm looking at? The Pine 64, which was about twice the size of the Raspberry Pi and had all these promises and never lived up to them, at least not to me. But I love the idea of this kind of store, of a place where, you know, anyone can go to see all this cool tech and see how it fits together. You know, if only there was a store like this, say, 20 or 30 years ago, maybe focused on radios, and you could have it kind of like in Little Shack.
you could do something like that.
You could do that. This is exactly where my brain went when I saw this. It was like, it's Radio Shack all over again, but in such a cool way. And I love it. I love it.
Yep. So I'm peeking at, you know, the links in here too from the raspberrypi.org space, and this is the first one. So I guess they're gonna try it out. They're gonna try it out in the UK, and I like where you went in terms of a makerspace, because this is now more of a community thing, and maybe the economic viability here is not that they're gonna sell thousands of Raspberry Pis, but it will help to facilitate, you know, the next steps. You know, this is almost like a first Lego League in store fashion.
Yeah.
Right.
Way cool.
Yeah, super cool. All right. Well, that kind of gets us to the end of our time, which is sad because there's so many more things to talk about. And if somebody wanted to share something with us, Michael, gosh, how would they do that?
Well, you know, I would try a couple of different ways. One, I would go to Twitter and go and tweet at games@work_biz and we'll see it. I could go to Facebook and go to the games@work.biz Facebook page, or, and we love when people do this, go to our website at games@work.biz, comment on the show, you know, drop us an email. There's a connect with us button there. You can DM us directly from the website. And we would love to hear from you.
And even if you felt inclined, a rating on iTunes, we would not turn that away.
That would be a novel idea.
All right. Well, looking forward to reconnecting again next week, and hopefully you're enjoying it, and we'll look forward to chatting with all of you then. See ya.
Bye.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and we'd like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at games@work_biz or at our website at games@work.biz.